Welcome to Hope Survives Podcast. I'm your host, Christabel Braden, a traumatic brain injury survivor and advocate, singer-songwriter, speaker, and creator of Hope After Head Injury. This podcast is all about hope, support, and education as we explore the realities of life with brain injury, with messages of encouragement, interviews with doctors and professionals, and survivor stories. So glad that you found us today. No matter where you're at on your journey, there is always hope. Today's episode is all about common challenges that brain injury survivors face. I've invited two special guests to join me today to bring a well-rounded view to this topic. First, I'm joined by Monica Vaccaro, Director of Programs for the Brain Injury Association of Pennsylvania, and who's worked in the field of brain injury for over 30 years. We have a conversation about brain injury symptoms, how they affect survivors on a practical and emotional level, and some strategies and tips for how to manage them. Next, you'll hear from Dr. Jeremy Schmo, founder and director of the Functional Neurology Center and co-developer of the Brain Health Online Summit. Over the past 10 years, he's been working with patients with complex neurological dysfunction. He's treated thousands of patients with head injuries, vertigo, dysautonomia, dizziness, movement disorders, neurodegenerative, and developmental disorders. Today, he shares some of the science behind brain injury symptoms. He talks about autonomics, vision and eye movements, the vestibular system, and more, and explains how a brain injury can affect the way that these systems integrate, which can then cause difficulties and symptoms that affect survivors every day. So as you can tell, we're in for a great episode. And without further ado, let's get started. Hi, Monica. Welcome, and thank you for coming on the Hope Survives podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Christabel.
Absolutely. So I know Monica from the Brain Injury Association of Pennsylvania, and she is absolutely incredible. She's done so much great work for survivors. How many years have you been working there?
Oh, my goodness. Probably about 15, I would say.
Wow. Yeah, a long
time.
Maybe
more. I'd have to go back and check. It's been a long time. I've been working in the field for almost 30 years, but for the Brain Injury Association specifically, about half of that time.
That's amazing. So you've seen a lot, and you've been around brain injury people for a long time.
Yeah.
So in your opinion, and from your experiences, what are common challenges and symptoms that brain injury survivors face?
So that's a really hard question, Christabel, because there is no one face of brain injury. You know, every brain injury is unique and individual. And there are various varied levels of brain injury, from like mild concussions all the way through to severe brain injury. But there definitely are some commonalities. So I would say, you know, for some people, there are physical challenges, not everyone for sure, but there are some people who will have weaknesses or hemiparesis or, you know, difficulty with speech production. But that's probably not what the biggest hallmarks of brain injury are. I think the biggest hallmarks of brain injury are cognitive changes.
Yeah. And as a survivor myself, I've definitely experienced these cognitive changes. And that's, I think, why they call brain injury invisible injury, because not everybody has physical symptoms. And even for those who do, it's not immediately recognizable as brain injury, unless you really have worked with brain injury people for a long time. But, you know, someone might see someone in a wheelchair and they don't necessarily know it's from a brain injury. And so it's this invisible factor that becomes a challenge to understand.
Absolutely. And it's a challenge for survivors because people's expectations are sometimes not based on understanding a person's cognitive challenges. You can't see it. And so sometimes if you can't see it, people don't necessarily even believe it. Yeah. And even the physical challenges, you mentioned someone who might be in a wheelchair because, you know, they have difficulty walking. You don't think of that as brain injury. You think of it as leg injuries or back injuries. But in reality, our brain controls everything we do, including our movement. So yeah, it's an invisible injury, and that makes it a challenge for survivors who are often misunderstood in the world.
Yeah.
So some of the cognitive challenges I can talk a little bit about. I would say one of the ones that people complain about the most, and even over a long period of time, is memory changes. Lots of different types of memory changes, but probably what people talk about the most is just not being able to always call on a memory when they need it. Like if, for example, if a person has instructions from a physician to do something specific, you know, it's not that they didn't understand it, but they might not be able to remember it when they need it, or remember that they have an appointment on a certain day. And even if they remember the appointment, that day comes and the memory doesn't pop up. Hey, that's today, I need to go. So memory impairments, specifically for memories that happened after the brain injury, is something we hear a lot about. You know, you talk about an invisible injury. Sometimes people really misunderstand the memory issues because they can remember things from their past really well. They can remember the name of their second grade teacher and, you know, what they wore on to a dance when they were in middle school, but can't remember necessarily whether or not they took their medication. And because the old memories are pretty good, people say, oh, I have a good memory. But memory is much more specific than that. And so the new memories are the harder ones.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember, especially earlier on in the journey, I remember feeling kind of scared about what I might have forgotten. Mm-hmm. There was like this fear of these holes in my memory that I knew existed. There would be a whole year after my TBI that I don't even remember. And then there's holes of months and I would meet people and then re-meet them over again and not even have remembered knowing them. And there's these emotions that come into play with the memory loss, because you're like, oh my gosh, how do I function in the world if I can't even remember conversations or where I've been or if I've eaten today?
Yeah, and that typically changes over time, where people's memory tends to get better, but mm-hmm. not necessarily back to the way it was before. But what becomes really important is to develop strategies, you know, not to put yourself in a position where you say, I have to remember this. You know, find a strategy for writing things down or putting reminders in your phone or whatever it takes. You know, I worked with someone in the field of brain injury years ago who used to say, you know, get the information out of your mind and put it on the table. And basically what he meant is don't hold your brain accountable for remembering. Put it down somewhere else physically in the world and rely on that strategy. So, you know, people with memory impairments can actually do pretty well with using good strategies, but it does feel kind of strange not to have the memory that you used to. It affects people's sense of themselves.
Yeah, and it affects relationships too, mm-hmm. because in family situations, if you don't have that common shared memory mm-hmm. of something that your sister or my sister has said to me, or family members, and, oh, you remember when this happened? And you don't at all. You start to feel odd and like there's something wrong with you. And it is a struggle. It can affect everything. But you're right. It does get better over time. And that can come either from coping strategies. I know that post-it notes have been a lifesaver. Reminders on your phone, alarms on the phone can be really great. We have this technology. Let's use it in a way that helps us. I use the Notes app quite a lot, and it has a to-do list that you can make little bubbles that you can check off. Mm-hmm. If I think of things that need to get done, I put them on my list so that I try not to forget them. But then also over time, as your brain begins to heal and that neuroplasticity, your brain's ability to rewire kicks in, the memory can improve. And I've definitely seen a huge difference in my personal short-term memories. Where it used to be and where it is now is completely different.
That's great.
I'm doing a lot better. Yeah.
That's great. And, you know, when I was first educated in this field, the prevailing idea was that, you know, you got most improvement in the first 6 months, and then there was a plateau. maybe even a year, and then they kept extending it. And the reality is you'll see improvements over a lifetime. It doesn't just happen in the way we thought it did in the first 6 months. You might get your most improvement in the first year, but people see improvements over many, many years, and that's encouraging for sure.
Yes, absolutely. So what are some other cognitive challenges?
Yeah, one of them that we hear a lot is challenges in sort of keeping up with the speed at which information comes in. So people will say, it's difficult for me to follow up conversations because it's just going by too fast. Or even in people who do very well in the work environment, who can think through all the work tasks really well and perform really well, just can't do it at the pace they used to because, you know, with the changes in the person's brain, perhaps the loss of some connections, it takes longer to process information, longer to think. And so people talk about just having difficulty keeping up with the speed of things.
Yeah, that's really well said.
And you know what that causes? Cognitive fatigue, right? People talk about their brain just being tired. Like we know about fatigue, physical fatigue. I need to take a nap. I'm tired. My muscles are tired after I've been active. But you can't really see the fatigue that happens in the brain. And people who have brain injury talk about it all the time. I just get mentally tired.
Yeah, fatigue is huge. And there is a really big difference between physical, like sleep tired, and brain tired, that cognitive fatigue. They're two different things because on the one hand, you could sleep for 8 hours and you can wake up. Your body doesn't need sleep at that moment, but you can wake up exhausted because your brain is just overdone. Maybe you did too much the day before or, you know, whatever it is, it can cause that cognitive fatigue that can happen first thing in the morning or as the day goes on. I know that that is very common for survivors. That's something I myself experience. I'm better in the morning. And then as the day goes on, as my brain battery starts to wear down and starts to get used up, there comes a point when the fatigue is so much that it's not like I'm ready to go to bed, but it might be 2 PM and I just can't think anymore.
Yeah, and I hear people talk about this a lot, Christabel, and some people have talked about wonderful strategies for dealing with that. And the first one is really just budgeting your cognitive energy. Like, you know, you're good in the morning, but not necessarily the morning after you've had a huge demanding day the day before.
Yep, that's very true.
So, you know, knowing that if you're going to have a day where you're going to have tests or you're going to have a big deadline at work or whatever, that you don't want to schedule something equally demanding the next morning. You sort of have to budget your cognitive energy and, you know, feed your cognitive energy. And there's lots of ways to do that, you know, mindfulness, rest, all sorts of ways to kind of, you know, replenish the energy in your brain.
Yeah, I tend to think about it as prioritizing and realizing what has to get done today. If I have 3 good hours of brain energy today, what needs to happen during those 3 hours? Mm-hmm. You know, what do I absolutely have to get done? And the level of fatigue that happens with your brain, I've had multiple re-injuries and re-concussions. And so over time, you know, the fatigue will start to get better and I'll start to have more energy. And then when I've had a new concussion that's happened again, I notice that the fatigue is the first thing to like really hit hard again. And it becomes challenging to get a sentence out, to even think about how to communicate this. And it becomes hard to take a shower, that kind of energy to stand for that long or to even do the dishes or chores or anything. It's like every single moment becomes a challenge. It becomes a mental task that you have to do. And it becomes something that drains your energy in a huge way.
Your brain is working really hard, and it's working harder when it's fatigued, and it's fatigued because of the effects of the injury. So sometimes building in breaks can really be helpful for people. I had a person I was working with who described it so beautifully to me. He described it like an Etch-a-Sketch board, where, you know, the Etch-a-Sketch where you start to put lines on it and it's empty and then you put more lines and it gets busier and busier and busier to the point where the whole screen is full. And he said, I just need to erase it, take a break, and then I can start again, because he needed to sort of shake it out and clear the screen. And for him, it might have just meant, you know, getting up and taking a walk for 10 minutes and coming back and he could concentrate again. Every person has to find out what it takes for them to address their fatigue and to renew their cognitive energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And every brain injury is different. So it's a matter of learning your limits. And I know in my journey as the survivor myself, if you're a survivor listening, it's really hard for you to maybe identify your own limits. Mm-hmm. I know that I would get really bad headaches and it would already be past the point that I was like toast before I would really notice. But my mom would notice, hey, you're starting to get exhausted. She would start to notice maybe my words are mixing up or maybe I'm a little bit off. And she might notice before I do that I'm reaching my limit. And so if you have a caregiver, a trusted friend or family member that's close to you, that spends a lot of time with you, that is able to recognize those things, sometimes it helps to ask for help. Whether it's asking for help to do things that you need to get done, but also asking for help in terms of, hey, can you let me know if I start to seem off or when I start to seem really tired? Because it took me personally a lot of years before I was able to recognize it in myself and recognize, I might call them tells, you know, my own tells when I start to get past the point that I can't function. But it would be so far gone by the time I would notice that I wasn't able to stop and take a break or rest. And now I've been learning more how to recognize, hey, one of my tells, actually, Monica, I don't know if I've ever told anyone this before, but if I'm typing and I type a word the way it sounds and not the way it's spelled.
Yeah.
So if I'm typing and then it's like I'm doing word finding, but I'll type and then I'll start misspelling things like crazy.
Time to take a break.
That's when I start to notice, wait a minute, I'm misspelling like my name or common words. And that's one of my tells that I've learned for myself, because I do a lot of work on the computer as a student. I'm typing papers a lot and typing up things. And so that's one of my tells. Another one could be if I do mix up my words. Another one could be, you know, I start to feel like I'm swaying and like I might start to fall over. And that's one of my tells. And so you have to kind of learn yourself and realize what starts to happen when I start to get off. And more recently, when I've noticed, oh, I'm misspelling words, I'm off, I have to get off my screen. I have to take a break. Maybe I'll lay down for like a half hour and then I can come back and do some more work. Whereas in the past, I would have pushed so hard that I wouldn't have been able to come back and do more work.
And it's not worth it, right? It doesn't pay off.
Exactly.
And you know, for some people, that tell is starting to feel irritable.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that I didn't remember that just then. Yes, starting to.
Well, I've never seen you irritable, Christabel, but.
Oh, it happens.
And, you know, I have to say, I used examples like work or things like that. But, you know, information processing happens in a social environment, too. So sometimes something that can really wear a person's brain out is just being at a family party.
Yeah. I remember having to go into a different room at Christmas or Thanksgiving by myself and just close the door and just close my eyes because I just could not be around the lights and the people anymore. And I had to take a break.
Yeah. It's overload. Conversations to keep up with, lights, music, food, whatever it is. There's so much going on. There's so much stimulation. Your brain is processing all of those things. So it's not just what we think of as work tasks or school tasks or things that we think of as really taxing our brain. It could be a social event that just has a lot to process.
Or a trip to the grocery store. That can be one of the hugest, worst undertakings because the lights, the noise, all the visual clutter of looking at the shelves and trying to differentiate between what's on what shelf and what you need to pick up versus what you don't want, that's overwhelming. And it's going out in public, you know, we briefly kind of were starting to talk about that overstimulation. Yeah. And so overload of auditory and visual stimulation, being in a restaurant or a coffee shop that's playing music in the background, trying to have a conversation with somebody in front of you, that can be one of the hardest things.
Yeah. And people learn how to control that as best they can. Survivors tell me they do things like saying, I'm going to a summer barbecue. It's going to have a lot of family members there. I'm only going to stay for 45 minutes. I've decided that in advance. And I know who my go-to people are. I'm going to go talk to this one cousin who I know understands my brain injury if I start to get overwhelmed. Or I'm going to, you know, not be around the grill where it's really busy. I'm going to go to these picnic tables on the side. So planning for how to make it work as best as possible really can make a difference. Doesn't mean that people can't go into those social situations or go to the grocery store, but go with a plan that gets you away from the stimulation when you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that planning ahead, because when you're in the moment, it's really hard to identify how you're feeling and what's going on. So if you ahead of time go, okay, this is going to be really stimulating, what are some things that I can do when I start to get overwhelmed? Because if you're in the moment of being overwhelmed, it's hard to make decisions.
It's hard to problem solve when you're in the middle of it. So planning in advance can make a big difference, and kind of knowing what will get you out of the overstimulation for a while, and then maybe you can go back into it.
Yes, absolutely. Also,
I'm sorry, Christopher.
No, you're good. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, another area of cognitive function that people talk about for a long time as being changed is kind of executive function. You know, that part of our brain, mostly, you know, the frontal lobes of our brain are responsible for this. The part of our brain that plans and organizes and keeps things in order, that can be affected by brain injury. And it can take a lot of extra time to do the kinds of planning that's necessary, and to develop a plan as to what you're going to do. And then as you're doing it, to see whether it's working or not working, do you need to make a change? You know, we do that without thinking most of the time. And sometimes people with brain injuries say they can't do that as easily as they did before. The part of their brain that's, you know, organizing for them is not working as well as it used to.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Executive function is hard to explain, but it's the part of our brain that we consider like the orchestra leader or the, you know, the control center, the executive, takes all the information that we have coming into our brain from a variety of sources, organize it and says, okay, this is what I need to do. So it's very abstract and it's a little difficult to explain, but a lot of people talk about just not being able to plan and organize the way they did before their brain injury.
Yeah. When you were explaining that, it made me think of, I guess the way that I reasoned it through my journey was like, I felt like I didn't have any filters. Mm-hmm. So when I'd take in all this information, it was like my brain couldn't filter through it. And right. So it would just be all there and I wouldn't know what to do with it. So it would just, I'd just shut down or not be able to make any decision, not be able to function, not be able to understand what I'm supposed to do. And it can cause you to feel really like helpless and confused a lot. I think confusion is, they list confusion as a symptom of brain injury, but I don't know if confusion is necessarily the symptom as much as the result of your brain not being able to process through different information.
You described it really well. And so another effect of all of these things we've been talking about is being able to control emotions and behavior.
That's what I was going to say before. Yeah. Emotions.
Like you talk about your filter, right? Yeah. And your filter, maybe you said things you wouldn't normally say, and some people really describe like a discontrol over emotion, like not being able to control whether they get angry or how angry they get, or, you know, that's like it's a neuropsychological function. It's not always under willful control, that if you feel something and it's really big and you express it, you know, people around you might not know how to handle that.
Yeah. And filters coming in and filters going out.
Yeah.
So it's, if you can't filter what's coming in and you're getting too overwhelmed by everything around you, it's hard to filter what's coming out. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to sort through how you actually feel about things, because especially, you know, we haven't really touched on the different areas of the brain, and that might be a conversation to have with a neuroscientist or something. But, you know, frontal lobe does control emotions. So if you have trouble controlling your emotions, it could come from an injury to your frontal lobe.
And the connections to the deep emotional centers of the brain between those deep centers and the frontal lobe can be disrupted. And you can get behaviors that are surprising. I mean, I've had many survivors say to me, I don't know why I got so angry. Like, that was not that big of a deal. It just came out of nowhere, 0 to 100 in, you know, instantly. And, you know, expressed anger in a way that was surprising to them. And then it goes away really quickly too.
Mm-hmm. Or just started crying out of nowhere. You know, there will be something that doesn't really upset me that much, but then I just crying, like weeping. And I'm like, I just couldn't control my emotions. And then if you're in the heat of a moment with somebody, if there's a misunderstanding, it's like you can't control how you say what you say, and you're frustrated because you're trying to express yourself. You're not sure how to sort through the emotions of what you're actually feeling. So maybe you are actually upset or irritated, but then it comes out as like a temper tantrum. But then on the inside, there, one of the things we've mentioned throughout, but we haven't really touched on, is word finding. Uh-huh. And so aphasia or word finding difficulties can be even more frustrating. And you can't use the words to say what you want to say because your brain just can't access the right words.
Exactly. And in some cases, that is truly a language impairment, like an aphasia. But in some cases, it's really just a retrieval. Like, you know, your brain's ability to retrieve the word that you know is there. It's not like it's lost. When a person is fatigued, that's more likely to happen than when they're fresh, which I think you said.
Yeah. I'll also have trouble forming my words in my mouth. Like, there will be times, especially after my most recent concussion was December 2019. And after that one, and like earlier in this year, I had a lot of trouble. It would feel like my tongue just wasn't working. I'd be trying to say words, and it was like I'm trying to form them in my mouth, and my tongue and my mouth just won't form the word. And they would come out really slow and really slurred, especially as I started to get tired. That actually hasn't happened for the last couple months, which has been really great. It's gotten better, but it's like this, and I'm a singer. I'm a professional singer. So yeah. I know how to enunciate words, and you might hear me speaking today very clearly. And when that happens, it's like you can't control it. And I would always say it feels like my mouth and my tongue just won't, it's like it just won't work.
Yeah, it's the motor areas of your brain, the motor planning areas of your brain, which are at no level of consciousness, is indicating to your tongue and to your lips and to all your speech articulators what to do and how to move. You know, that's a brain function, you know, motor planning. And Christabel, it just makes me think that what you said before about an invisible injury, no one would look at you unless your mom, like you said, knows you really well and sees when you're fatigued, but no one would look at you and imagine that you have any of these challenges that you talked about. No one can see how hard you're working. And I don't know if you get that reaction from people.
Yeah. I mean, over time, because my brain injury is over 12 years ago, over time, I've learned to grow and adapt and figure out my limits. So the way I'm able to do this podcast and my other podcasts and the other things is every day I plan and manage my brain energy. And I'll just say I don't always do the best job at it, but I try. There are definitely times that I end up overextending myself way too far. And that's something I'm trying to work on. But there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. I think especially as a brain injury survivor, it's just a matter of recognizing, okay, this is the time that my brain is able to do this. And when I start to get exhausted and having to put it away, there'll be whole days that I can't do anything because I have such a bad migraine. And we haven't talked about this yet.
Yeah.
Migraines and headaches and pain. Yeah. We'll just segue into that real quick, because migraines and chronic pain after brain injury can be one of the most discouraging things.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to think with a brain that has a headache is such a challenge. I mean, I haven't experienced it, so I can't talk about it the way that you can, but I can only imagine how difficult it is to think when you have a bad headache. And it is one of the symptoms that people complain about the most, and for the most time post-injury, when people still say they have headaches.
Yeah, and it feels impossible in the moment. And it's like when you're in those like extreme pain days, it feels like it's never going to go away. It's like I logically know this won't be this severe forever, but it feels like you can't fix it, mm-hmm. you know? And after my first TBI, I spent at least a year and a half, probably 2 years, with a constant headache. It never let up. It just varied in degrees of intensity. My head was constantly in pain. And I only know this because the first day that it let up, I think it was around two and a half years after my TBI, I was like, there was a couple hours that I didn't have a headache. And I was like, what? It was so foreign to me to not have head pain that I realized I've literally had a constant headache for this long. And I will, if you're listening and you're in the early stages, it can get better. Every brain injury is different. You know, all of our symptoms are different. All of the ways that we struggle with it is different. But not only in myself, but also in other survivors that I've met and talked to, the headaches do improve over time. They do. They become different, and you start to learn how to cope with them better, and you realize, oh, a headache's coming on. I should drink a whole bunch of water, you know, or take fish oil or supplements that your neurologist might recommend, magnesium. I have a rescue migraine medication from my neurologist that I don't take every day. He doesn't recommend taking it more than twice a week, but my insurance only covers 4 per month. So another issue that we deal with is insurance companies and all of that stuff. And so I have to really ration out the days that I use the rescue medication. And it really does help. But I have to take it as I feel the headache coming on. And then it's able to help during the day. But that part of that is learning your tells and realizing, oh, I have a headache right now. Oh, it's just going to get worse. I need to go ahead and take this medication.
And Christabel, not everyone with brain injury gets headaches.
Yeah, that's
true. That's an individual response. And some people's headaches have a more treatable cause than others. So, you know, there are ways to find out more about treatment for headaches. And I know you're going to get into that later, but you have your plan that works for you. But I do say, absolutely, headaches are something people complain about, and they can be debilitating.
Yeah. And also, there can be whiplash or neck misalignment, depending on how your brain injury happened. Mm-hmm. And so you can go on for years and not realize maybe your neck isn't aligned. Mm-hmm. Being able to recognize, you know, wow, the brain injury could affect so many things.
And I think, you know, your message of hope is really important, Christabel, because despite all of these challenges, people with brain injury can do really well and accomplish a lot working around them. Not to dismiss them, not to minimize them, they're there, but it doesn't have to stop your life.
I always say that brain injury survivors are some of the most resilient and beautiful people that I've ever met. I've had the honor of going to a lot of brain injury conferences and events over the last couple years, and speaking and singing and also just attending brain injury support groups and meeting survivors. And I always see this determination and motivation and resilience within survivor community, because we know that we've survived. And it brings us this, I don't know, there's just this warrior mentality, like, I can do this. And you start to improve, whether it's going to therapies or working on your daily schedule or just, you know, cooking a meal. That can be the hugest accomplishment, because all the executive functioning that goes into cooking is like, and following a list and following a task, that's hard.
And doing more than one thing at a time when you're cooking. You don't cook one thing and then cook another thing. It requires a lot of organization. So yeah, it's a challenging activity.
Yeah. But brain injury survivors, I believe we can do anything we put our minds to. We just might have to do it differently. Mm-hmm. Differently doesn't mean bad. It just means different. And so if you're listening to this and you're a survivor, just be encouraged that you're not alone, and there are things that can help you to improve and to move forward. If you're a caregiver or a family member, be encouraged that there's hope for your loved one to continue to improve and to do what they want to do and to move forward in life. And yeah, are there any other common signs and symptoms or challenges you can think of, Monica?
I think we covered most of them, you know, memory, executive function, emotional control, information processing speed, and then, you know, as you said, headaches and physical symptoms. I think those are the things we hear about the most. But as I said, it'll be different for every person, a different constellation of symptoms depending on the specifics of the brain injury. So, you know, each person is an individual and has to figure out, with some help, hopefully, and I know you're going to be talking about resources later, you know, how to learn about your brain injury, how to learn to respect it, and to move on with life despite it and around it.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. Thank you, Monica. So I'm going to be bringing Monica back on the another episode to talk about resources and the Brain Injury Association. So make sure that you stay tuned and subscribe, and we'll continue the conversation about how hope survives. Welcome, Dr. Jeremy Schmo, to the Hope Survives podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you so much for coming. And let's get right into it. What can you share about brain injury and the common challenges that brain injury survivors face?
Yeah, so the basics of it are, when you injure your brain, you know, which can happen from a whole host of different things, you know, you could slip and fall and, you know, hit your head on the ground or, you know, do whatever. I've seen so many different types of traumas that have happened to people. You injure your brainstem a lot with these different types of head injuries. And what happens is you get this twisting and this torsion that goes into the brain. And it seems to really affect midline areas of the brain. And in those regions are the areas that control your eye movements, how you breathe, so your autonomic systems, your balance, and basically where your brain knows where your body is in space. And if you don't know where your body is in space, how are you supposed to move effectively throughout your environment? And how are you supposed to actually get blood to areas that really need that blood, like up to your head and up to your gut or down to your gut? So just from doing different movements, like going from seated to standing, if your brain doesn't know, you know, where you are in space, you might have pooling of blood that ends up in the lower extremities and doesn't get up to your head, and you might feel lightheaded or dizzy. So that's kind of my easiest way of explaining how a brain injury can affect your autonomic system. And what are the autonomics? They're just reflexive systems that allow you to, you know, get blood to different areas that need it, help you digest your food. You know, you don't think about, you know, every single breath that you take, or just these simple reflexive things that your body does. That's what your autonomic nervous system does. And those areas of the brain that control it and modulate it definitely get affected with traumatic brain injury. So you can obviously have issues with your eye movements as well, with concussion and head injuries. And you can have issues with your vision and your visual acuity. what I always tell people a lot of times, they say, hey, my visual acuity is fine. I've been to the neuro-ophthalmologist or the neuro-optometrist and visually I'm doing great, but I have issues with my vision. And I tell them that these issues with their vision come down to how the brain fires out to actually control the eye movements, to get your eye muscles to actually target appropriately, keep your eyes steady, follow targets, tolerate like visual motion. Your visual system really uses your entire brain. So if you injured your frontal lobe or your parietal lobe or the cerebellum or the brainstem, all of those areas of the brain could affect how your eyes track and how your eyes move, and also how your eye movements actually integrate with your vestibular system and your neck and how your brain knows where your body is in space. So it's not always just an issue with like eye muscles per se. It's a sensory integration issue of how all the different systems work together to let you know where you are. And the basics of it are we're always in gravity. So gravity loads our muscles and our muscles give feedback to our brain. So we know where all of our body parts are in space. And the brain is trying to integrate that with what the vestibular system is saying. And the vestibular system is basically, it comes from your inner ear and it has different canals and other organs that let you know where your head is in space when you go and when you move it. So you don't just move your head and feel like you're, you know, continually spinning in one direction. These systems are balanced between the left ear and the right ear. And that information goes into the brainstem, and then that goes up into the brain to let you know where your head is in space when you move it. That vestibular system really talks with your eye movements. So when you move your head, everything looks clear for your vision, and objects don't look like they're jumping around on you. When you injure the brain and those systems aren't talking together 100% perfectly, you could have dizziness, issues with your balance, issues with how your eyes track. And remember, those areas are very closely related to the autonomic centers in the brainstem, which can make you feel lightheaded, nausea. You could have issues digesting your food. You could have issues with neurological fatigue. So really, it's a very amazing system that we kind of take for granted every day of just standing up and walking and moving around. Then when it gets injured, it really makes your brain have to work way harder. So everything becomes harder. So just like sitting here is harder, or moving your head and turning it one way is harder. And it drains your battery when these areas are injured. So if all day long, reflexively, your autonomic system is out of whack, and you don't know where your body is in space, it drains your battery. So your frontal lobe, like the area that makes you human, that makes you think and have emotions and positive emotions and not have anxiety and depression, when those areas of the brainstem are all off and you're draining your battery, then your frontal lobe starts to get affected and you don't feel so good. So those are kind of my easiest ways of explaining how those systems get off. And what we do is we examine those systems and then try and activate them to get them to function better.
Yeah. Wow. You explained that so well. Thank you so much. You know, we talk about, as brain injury survivors, we talk about neurological fatigue and we talk about dizziness and nausea and all these things that we experience. But you explained why and how they happen. You know, and having our balance off, you know, that's something that is just kind of commonly accepted by as being part of a brain injury. But it's so interesting to realize the way that an injured brain is working differently.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, say, for example, if you had an issue with how your eyes track and your vision, with an integrated sensory system that all these systems talk to each other, you might not have to just give somebody a bunch of eye exercises to get their vision better. Like you could work on their balance or do some sort of movement with their leg or have them, you know, maybe rotate in a chair and activate their vestibular system and get their visual system better. So a lot of people that I see will have issues with their vision, and then they're purely doing visual based training exercises, and that system is off with them. So they get very fatigued from it. So what we do is try and kind of layer these different systems together with exercises to kind of make that perfect recipe for each individual, for what their brain needs, to let them know where their body is in space. And when you know where you are, then you start to see the autonomic systems improve. You see less fatigue, you see better balance. And when you know where you are in space, your battery doesn't get as drained. And then you start to have more energy for being able to do everyday tasks like talk on the phone, or, you know, maybe be able to scroll on your computer, or do more work, or cognitively be able to like hold a conversation with somebody and not feel like you're completely wiped after. So
like that brain fog feeling.
Yeah. Small little exercises that are targeted specifically for what that person needs goes a long way.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that and explaining all that. And I'm going to bring Dr. Schmo back onto the podcast next week. And so stay tuned. He's going to be sharing more about functional neurology and how that is able to help brain injury survivors. But for today, take away that if you have any of these struggles and symptoms, that there is hope and there is help available for you. Thank you for listening to Hope Survives Brain Injury Podcast. I hope this episode was able to encourage you in some way. To get in touch with me, you can connect on social media. The page Hope After Head Injury on Facebook does have a message option if you'd like to message me. You can also connect with me on Instagram at Christabel Braden is my page, and at Hope After Head Injury is the Hope After Head Injury page. My website, ChristabelBraden.com, or hopeafterheadinjury.com, as well as join our support group on Facebook. All the links will be in the show's description, and we hope to see you next time on Hope Survives.